It's Business Beat. Yeah, it is. It is. It's another day and another Business Beat. And, wow, we're into a new month. A lot of excitement going on. We're going to be talking cookies in a little bit. I don't want to get you guys all excited about it. But, David, you got some, you know, some bigwigs in the house today. We'll talk to them in a little bit. But let's start by talking to each other. Congratulations. And, you know, we've had an inauguration this week, and I think it sounds like the market's up. It sounds like a lot of the world leaders are pretty excited. I'm seeing a real big focus on, you know, tackling this coronavirus. And I feel like I'm telling you, I feel like I'm in a bit of a positive mood. How do you feel about it?
Similarly, you know, it feels like a fresh start for all of us in that, you know, we, without turning this into a political discourse, you know, it feels like we have a real chance to get this virus under control much faster as we accelerate the rollout of the vaccines and getting more people vaccinated in a more efficient process. It feels like leadership is really focused on stabilizing large swaths of the economy. And for so many people, small businesses and individuals that have been struggling throughout the last 10 months, it feels like there's some real help on the way. And that is incredibly encouraging. And I hope that now that we're past the election and the post-election frenzy, that we can come together. And, you know, this is it may sound like a platitude, but it's sincere, that we can all come together and get over the divisions and work together to improve the country for the benefit of all of us and not just the benefit of a few of us.
Aaron, what was your favorite part about this week?
I mean, it was a certain lightness, you know, to have an administration come in with a plan, who's serious again about helping and figuring out how to, you know, navigate COVID. I think that's been really what has moved me, is to feel like maybe now we can have a plan. You know, the future was looking a little bleak for a bit, and now I just feel like I can pause, have a minute, and maybe see some light somewhere in the future.
Well, I mean, I feel like, you know, obviously we can't say it without, you know, acknowledging that 400,000 people have passed and that we have hit a spike. We are at the top. We are not heading down yet. And I think that's the first indication we're all going to be looking for. All my touring friends, all my restaurant friends, all my, you know, entertainment friends. I mean, this is absolutely, absolutely devastating. And they are holding on by their fingernails here. And the industries around them, trucking, you know, rental companies, you know, the support that goes out for all of these major, especially anything outdoors, anything with lots of people. I mean, think about the graduations and think about, you know, venue rentals and, you know, weddings and all. I mean, all these businesses are just completely, completely sideways, and they're waiting for any positive indicator. And, you know, as Aaron said, I think we got a little bit of light under the door here, but we have to work very hard right now.
I feel better knowing that we have people who are working hard towards a solution, towards a unified solution, because, you know, I am aware, we're all aware, that February and March are going to be dark months for COVID, especially with the new contagious variant, you know, now in Massachusetts. And, you know, it will soon be other places than just here and there. And so I feel very happy to know that we have people in political offices who are ready to, you know, tackle that solution.
Well, did you see, David, I don't know if you got a chance to see the first person to go that was asked, that I read about from the previous administration, was the Surgeon General. So that's a pretty clear indicator that they have a path forward, and that didn't include the appointee from the previous administration. What do you think?
Agreed. Yeah, I agree with you. You know, one of the benefits of a fresh start is that we had a lot of people in the previous administration. This is, you know, this is not a political thing. This is just a matter of fact, that were appointed because of their connections to the administration or the industries they were now tasked to regulating. So they didn't always have the best interest of the general public at heart in approaching their jobs. And as the years went on, there was a lot of pressure to provide, you know, a reinforced message from what was coming from the top. And I think now we're going to see people that are going to tell the truth about their jobs and the situation the country faces, and bring the seriousness and the confidence to try and get things done. Even with a divided Congress, it's still going to be, you know, there's still going to be a lot of partisanship and infighting, and, you know, a lot of the early 2024 contenders for the presidency are already trying to position themselves. But hopefully there will be a recognition that with the competency and significance of having people with deep government experience now leading these agencies, that we can work to improve conditions, again, for the majority and not just for a small elite minority of the country.
From a Massachusetts standpoint, you know, this week we will find out if we've hit the markers to, you know, increase capacity options for businesses. I believe it's the 26th that we'll figure that out. I, you know, numbers have gone down a little bit. They've gone up a little bit. I can't really project what will happen, but, yeah. You know, I'm crossing my fingers that we'll be able to move into a different phase, and some of, you know, our restaurant friends and our retail friends will get some respite.
I mean, even though we're not particularly going down at this exact moment, I think we just sort of have to move forward with a plan to start saying, open your footprint up 20% and whatnot. But, you know, the struggle really is, I don't know if you live, there's an event in Dallas this weekend at a nightclub that was packed, and a bunch of performers came up and were lauding some guy who was a manager for the performers, and nobody was wearing a mask. It was a concert situation. People were packed shoulder to shoulder. One business like that just destroys it for everybody. And I'm hoping that mask mandates aren't a game. I hope they're not free will. I hope it doesn't make you un-American. I hope you appreciate that we have to have mask mandates. And if they open you up and you're supposed to be 30% capacity and you're 31% capacity, you need to close down for a month, because other people are going to try to play by the rules and do it the right way. And I think that's the only fair thing that we can make happen. There have to be repercussions, but we need to start opening up some doors with some very strict guidelines. I don't know. I mean, I know that's an unpopular opinion, but I just don't know how much longer people are going to be able to hold on out here.
I agree with you. And it's also, at some point, you know, in previous periods of our country's history, during periods of crisis, you know, use World War II as an example, there was a collective, we need to come together and make a shared sacrifice to get through this so that we come out of this in better shape than we did coming into it. And I'm hoping that the tide will turn for coronavirus and COVID, and that the mask mandates get depoliticized and just, you know, it's common sense. And to your point, that if the mandate is 30% capacity, stick to 30% capacity. You know, yes, it's tempting, and yes, sometimes honest mistakes get made, but look at the big picture. It's not just about you. We have to get over this. We have a twin pandemic. One is the coronavirus, and the other one is just this inherent selfishness. We have to get over the selfishness pandemic of, you know, my right to be a jerk outweighs your right to live. You know, and we've got to get past that. Put the mask on, wash your hands, observe the guidelines. You know, the faster we do this together, the more of us participating, the faster we can get people vaccinated and get over this thing and resume life the way it was pre-pandemic to some degree.
You know, I want to jump into something else quickly, too, which is that since, you know, Twitter shut down Trump, disinformation, misinformation, fake news has dropped ridiculously. And you can feel the calm out there without this constant, you know, whipping of people's emotions, constantly going on here. And that's another part of it, too. We have no controls over, anybody can say anything they want. It's not the First Amendment. You're lying to people, and other people pay the price for it. I mean, that's been tremendously frustrating for me to watch.
I agree.
For sure.
That's the true crime. I think is that other people are paying for the lies that those in power can tell. And again, I'm not just talking political people here. I'm talking everybody.
I don't think any of this has to do with politics. I don't think either one of you guys has to apologize and say it's not a political show. The politics is how money gets transferred, is our international relationships, has everything to do with what the government is saying. So I think it's okay if we talk about it. I think that we are all fairly unbiased people. I think we call it like we see it. And in this particular case, there was a reckless attitude about who was going to pay for all this stuff now that you've used it, right? There are no more COVID vaccines. We called up Canada and said, there's nothing. Hey, guess what, Canada? You're getting nothing. All the first doses went out and there is no second doses. It's the same situation we went into with the masks back in March. Biden is inheriting a completely broken distribution system right now. And I think that's a fact. I think in over the next couple of days or weeks, we're going to find out exactly how bad it is, because right now they have no idea.
On the plus side of that, though, is that he is going to activate FEMA and the National Guard to manage distribution of the vaccines, and he's invoking the Defense Production Act to produce PPE supplies. But in doing so, invoking that act also might help to create some ancillary jobs, which we could certainly use to help get our country back and reemployed for all the people, you know, the millions are still out of work from the shutdown. That part will help. And again, having people in charge that really care about getting the job done, delivering for the most people, as opposed to appealing to, you know, a certain media segment, is going to be critical. And hopefully between the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines that are available now and a couple of more that will be approved shortly, we can get 100 million doses in people's arms in the next 100 days.
I think the Defense Production Act was something I never understood why we didn't pull that out right away, right in March, when we didn't have the masks and we didn't have the ventilators and we didn't have the respirators, we didn't have the gloves. Why didn't we invoke that immediately? And you're absolutely right, because it would put people to work. Testing stations, you know, manufacturing, distributing, all that stuff could have actually employed people. And I don't understand why there wasn't a reason. We should have done a better job of managing the food supply at the time, too, because if you remember, some of the biggest outbreaks were in meatpacking plants where the majority of the people were very low paid, most of them not English-speaking people. A lot of people died. The ones in Iowa, it was like all of them. Had to shut down because, you know, yeah. And we didn't get involved at all in that business. And that was a huge mistake. And so as bad as it is now, there are a bunch of things that we can do. And the Defense Production Act absolutely should have been at the top of the list back in March and April.
One of the other things that's going to help get the economy going again is that pretty soon we're going to have rapid tests available, both to purchase online or in stores. You can take home, get them, and do the test at home and not have to send it back to a lab, so you'll have a result in 15 minutes. But if you think about concerts and live events again, having rapid tests that people can take on their way in, get a result, and be isolated if they test positive on the way into an event is going to help businesses get to reopen. It's going to help restaurants and other hospitality industry venues to make sure that their employees are healthy and safe, the customers are. It's going to make it safe all around for people to go back out and congregate, which provides, obviously, a massive lift to the economy that we would like to see happen.
It also will help schools get open again, and that will also help the
great
economy
point.
Because it will send people back to work who haven't been able to work because, you know, they live in communities like ours and yours where they've been remote this entire time. Right now Framingham isn't even close to hitting the marks that they need to open the schools back up. But if we had testing, because right now the biggest concern is that we will have more in school transmissions, because there were some this fall. If we have those rapid tests, that's going to be less likely to happen.
We were talking to somebody who's an educator, and he's been pretty vocal with his employer about, you know, what the rules are and what needs to happen. And they've been just like, you know, damn the torpedoes about getting, you know, keeping the school open. And it's a private school, so they can do what they want. And they've had to shut down three separate times in this first pandemic right up to this point. So between March and now, they've had to shut down the school three times because of infections. That tells you that there is something inherently wrong. Even if you wanted to go and you wanted to open it up and somebody could do it, I'm giving you an example of a place that's got their own rules and three separate times they've had to do it. They're going to lose a teacher. They're going to lose some people if they continue to make this happen. It may have as already, for all I know, but it's not, we can't do it. We can't open the schools yet. And I think the rapid testing is absolutely key to get things, the economy going again.
100%. I'm glad, Aaron, you made that point. It's so important that testing the kids and the teachers and the administrators, because it's not just the parents that can go back to work as their kids are able to go to school again. It allows daycare centers to reopen, after-school programs to reopen, and get kids back into a bit of a more regular routine and shake some of the rust off. And from a mental health standpoint, getting out of the house more and getting regular exercise and seeing friends again is just so important at any age, but especially for kids.
I think you also need to make sure that, like, for instance, these unregulated private events that have been going around on the weekends here, The problem about sending your kid to school is you don't know what everybody else's parents are up to. And during this last administration, everybody else's parents could have been right, you know, very, very non-mask or whatever, and then you got to go put your kid in school with that. The kid doesn't going to get it. He's not going to get sick from it, but he can transmit it. He'll transmit it to your kid, and your kid gives it to you, and then you're the person with the problem. The non-ramification for your own, you know, using your own discretion to wear it or don't wear it is not a sustainable way to run any program, and that has to change too. That especially when it comes to schools, if you, your parents or somebody makes a situation, that kid's got to come out of school. He's got to come out of school. He's got to stay remote, and you're going to have a whole remote program for people who don't follow the rules, because you're never going to get the schools open, because it, you know, it'll just keep trickling in like this other school I was talking about. We got to have rules.
I wonder if, you know, if they're going to have questionnaires, and this is something that I don't know anything about, but I think about going to the chiropractor, for example. They have pre-screening questions that you have to answer within 48 hours of going. And if you answer yes to any of their questions, you can't come in for your appointment. So, I mean, I'm wondering, you know, are there protocols like that you can put in for your kids to come into school each week? I don't know, just thinking out loud as I am desperate to have my children get to go back to school.
Why did I say that, Aaron?
I don't know.
Well, we're fortunate. We're extremely fortunate. Yeah. We're very lucky that we can provide this atmosphere. Our concerns are with the people that live down the street from us, and we know that there is assistance going on. And then we know people that work at hospitals overnight that need a babysitter to stay with their kids overnight while they're working at a hospital, and then they get off, and then they walk their kids to the school bus, and then they go to another job. This is just absolutely devastating. And I think that there's just been way too much of people being concerned about their own backyard and not the welfare of their neighbors. We need to turn the scope outwards and understand how every person affects every business and everything. So, we got it. We don't have a hold on it yet, but there's a chance that now we can maybe make some gains.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, to answer Aaron's question, I think part of it is the rapid testing will help a lot in getting kids back to school consistently, whether it's done weekly, done daily even, which is certainly a possibility. Maybe it's a test that, you know, is taken to the bus stop before you get on the bus. I don't know how that all will lay out. But I do think that's going to have a big impact on this. And then as vaccines roll out over the next several months, you know, and the priorities are going to go, obviously, the elderly and first responders, and then go down the party list. You look at how Israel's done it. They've done it brilliantly, and they've vaccinated almost the entire country at this point. They started, you know, 80-plus, and then 70-plus, and 60-plus, and on down the line. And they very efficiently managed to inoculate, obviously it's a much smaller country than we are, but they managed to inoculate nearly the entire country in just the first month or so. We need to have that level of vaccine rollout done. I think hopefully with this new plan and money behind it to get the FEMA and the National Guard out, getting the kids vaccinated, you know, by spring is going to allow everyone to have a summer again, and for schools to reopen in full. And, you know, coming into September, everything is back to full in-person learning.
So the kids, it's still not, it hasn't been approved for 16 and under. So getting everyone who has to take care of children inoculated first would be ideal.
Yeah, I'm going to say teachers and childcare professionals need to be on our level. But I have to say there's a bit of genius around that Israeli program, which would be that going from highest to lowest is pretty smart, because you obviously have a smaller group of people at the high end. In the 90s, there's not as a larger population. You learn a little bit about inoculation. You learn about creating centers and things like that. So our venues that aren't being used should be, the Centrum, you know, Fenway, these conventions. Convention centers should be these systems. You've got security guards that can be there. You've got, people that can be providing inoculation support and things like that. There's a way to employ people and actually make this, I don't want to call it a military operation, but, you know, a regulated thing that involves the whole population. And what I like about that the Israeli structure, that it's a complete structure. Right now, our thing is state by state and super, super random. And that's not effective, I don't think.
100% agree. And again, part of that is just a decision by the now former administration to say, all right, you're on your own. We're going to send the vaccine to the states. You guys handle it. And it was a total hands-off, laissez-faire approach that has led to the mess that we're now in.
I'm so happy to be a part of the United States of America again.
On that note, speaking of the United States of America, let's talk about the most American thing I can possibly think of right now, which is cookies. I love cookies, and we are going to take this frown and turn this upside down into a smile and talk about cookies and talk about this amazing program. Okay, David, could you please introduce us to our guest?
I would be happy to. It is my pleasure to welcome Melanie Bonsu, who is the Director of Development and Marketing Communications for the Girl Scouts of Central and Western Mass. Hello, Melanie.
Hello, how are you?
So, as we get into this, I just want to give some people listening a bit of background. Can you describe the mission of the Girl Scouts for us?
Absolutely. So our mission is to build girls of courage, confidence, and character who make the world a better place.
And how many girls does your organization serve each year in Central and Western Mass?
We serve nearly 7,500 girls in 186 cities and towns throughout Central and Western Massachusetts.
Oh, that's awesome. For a lot of us, we hear Girl Scouts, the first thing we think of are cookies, unsurprisingly. And we're going to talk about cookies in a minute. But before we do, can you share with us some insights on youth and leadership development that's inherent to the Girl Scouts mission?
We are over 109 years old, and our program is research-backed. It's developed with girls in mind, specifically for girls, and we provide a variety of opportunities for girls to develop their own leadership skills and devise their own leadership path. The core of everything we do is with girls in mind. So with that, we have a three-step process that we incorporate into all of our programming, which is girl-led, learning by doing, and cooperative learning. We have programming from outdoors, summer camp, STEM, financial literacy, personal health and wellness, and so much more. And right now, ever so timely, we even have civics badges.
I was going to ask you, the girls get badges, but a lot of people don't know that the Girl Scout members earn their badges. Why, in your opinion, is it important for Girl Scout members to earn their badges?
So the importance of earning a badge, a lot of people just think it's something to decorate their sash or their vest, but it's actually, these girls come together as a troop and cooperatively decide what programs they're going to do and what badges they're going to earn. Once they earn their badges, they proudly display them on their vest and sash. And it's not so much as bragging as much as to show the new skills and the new skills that they've learned and what they've accomplished throughout the years in the program.
I'm curious, you know, for a lot of nonprofit organizations, of which WSN is one, 2020 is a very difficult year because of the pandemic situation. How did you manage to keep your programs going and keep the kids engaged in our now virtual world?
Yeah, that was a challenge. We had to pivot. Yeah, I think that's like the term for 2020 for businesses is pivoting. That we had our last fundraiser on March 12th, and then pretty much 3 days later, the whole state shut down. We had to cancel in-person and troop meeting programming pretty much until June, as well as, unfortunately, the difficult decision to cancel our summer camp programs. We do resident and day camps at four camps. We decided last May that it would be in the interest of safety that we would be canceling those. So we did cancel summer camp. We have an amazing program team, and they quickly shifted to virtual, offering virtual programs online for free. You didn't even have to be a Girl Scout to participate. Anyone could come and do it. And then when it was safe in June to start meeting in person again, we developed guidelines to ensure the safety and still try to get people outside. We opened up our camps that troops could use for outdoor programming. We did offer some outdoor programming, but it was tough. Communication was key. We needed to be in communication with our members quite often and as transparent as possible to keep them engaged.
That's great. So I'm curious, we want to talk about cookies because that's the subject at hand. We're all, you know, it's in the middle of the afternoon, we're all hungry. Why do the girls sell cookies and what are some of the life lessons that the girls get in doing so?
So the cookie is actually a program. Well, people like to call it the cookie sale, but we refer to it as a program. The girls are learning while they're doing. So there's five skills that they're supposed to come out of the cookie program with, and they're all business related. So if they learn goal setting, decision making, money management, people skills, and business ethics. So they learn how to, you know, a six-year-old Daisy knows how to make change. And the skills that they learn are obviously progressive as they age. But these girls are pretty much running their own businesses. They decide what they're going to do with their money. They decide how many cookies they're going to sell. They decide, you know, as a troop, our goal, we want to go, we want to do a weekend camp out at one of our camps. It costs X amount of money. And then they got to break it down to, all right, if we can't do this, what else could we do instead if we don't hit our goal? So it's really a lot more than just, you know, earning money. And they earn money for their troops, but it's also, you know, they're building their business skills. And as they get older, they're learning what it takes to really run a business.
Which then helps them as they plan for their futures and develop those skills they carry forward as they grow up and go to school and then head out into the workforce. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. We have a lot of female business owners that attribute their skills to what they learned by selling Girl Scout cookies.
WICN over the last couple of months had a chance to run a pair of workshops with the girls to work with them about learning marketing and radio. We gave them a chance to come on Business Beat as we're doing today. You know, Business Beat is a WICN show that I co-host with Aaron and Ian, and we focus primarily on small business entrepreneurship, nonprofits, local business development in the area. The girls that participated had a chance to learn about marketing from out of home and TV commercials and radio production. They then had to create a business plan and a marketing pitch to submit to us, gave them an opportunity to earn one of the new entrepreneurship badges. And I think the key here is that to earn the badge and not just be given one. How do you think this experience helped the girls with this year's cookie sales?
First, I want to thank you guys for hosting this program because it was, in my opinion, one of the most amazing programs. And it was so timely and perfect. We're in a world right now where we're not used to selling cookies in this pandemic. So there a lot of things had to change. So giving the girls new and innovative ways to market their business is a huge deal. And we are so very appreciative that you were able to provide this program to them.
It is our pleasure. We love being able to support the kids and the community and help them develop these skills. It's so important to us to help the next generation succeed. So I'm very excited. We have in studio 50 with us right now. So there's a lot of competition, but the winning jingle is produced by a young woman named Sri Tabati. We're going to play this song for you momentarily. Say hello to everybody, Sri.
Hello.
What was your favorite part about participating in this program?
Like creating something new.
Excellent. And I have to ask, what's your favorite type of Girl Scout cookie?
All of them.
that is the political answer for sure. Would you like to play for us?
Buy your cookie, buy him now. We got eight types, I know. Well, here were the names. Number one, more Taffy, Taffy, Tag Along, Dosey, Dose, Thin Mint, Tree, Foiled, and we also got Lemon Up. You crave for cookies, we got so many, yet we end it only February. So come and get your cookie right now. Hi, go to www.girlscout.org and support us by getting your own boxes of cookies. So get them quick.
Yay, that was excellent.
That was amazing.
That great.
Was good job.
So good.
That was
fabulous.
So much fun.
Thank you, Melanie. Thank you so much. Three, thank you so much for this. We are so happy to have you as part of Business Beat for this episode. And we're looking forward to some cookies soon, too.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Melanie. Thank you for helping to make this happen today. And we will speak to you again soon.
All right, great. Have a good one.
Thank you. You too.
Save some of those cookies, David. Don't think you're going to don't think that you're going to keep them all for yourself.
Listen, everyone knows the Thin Mint's the best Girl Scout cookies. I'll brook no argument here.
I think we're in agreement. We're in agreement on that one. So awesome to see WICN put this out there, and it's in the middle of the pandemic to really make the platform work for a wonderful institution and keep something that, as far as I'm concerned, everybody looks forward to every single year. So congratulations to everybody there. Oh, I'm serious. Don't even bogart those, David.
I need at least 10 boxes of Thin Mints to get me through February.
Done.
All right. Well, it's been a great Business Beat. Good to talk to you guys. We'll see you all again next week. And here's to cookies in all of your life going forward.